You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. I'm Chris Manning, your host from fearthesword.com. Today's show, just so you know, is a conversation I had with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball and the Locked On Podcast Network. It talks about fantasy basketball. It talks about everything that is, could really be realistic about the Cavs. It will give you an overview of what I think this roster is going to be. So, for me, I think it's an interesting roster. I do think that the Cavs are going to be interesting in maybe some funky ways, but interesting. This show will get you covered. We're now ramping back up for the season. I've obviously taken hiatuses. If you looked at this feed, been a little busy. But now that the season's getting going, we're going to have a bunch of great stuff. Great guests. Two already booked that I'm very excited about, one of which you will hear on Friday, if everything goes to plan on Thursday. But today's show, Josh Lloyd back on Friday with a guest who I'm not going to name until I get a chance to tweet it out, but it's someone I'm very, very excited to talk about and or talk with it, rather. And without further ado, here's today's show, and thank you for listening. Very excited to get back to ramping up the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. Today we are doing another team preview podcast. We are looking at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. To talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers and a team with lots of questions, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Cavs podcast. Chris Manning is back on the show. Chris, welcome back.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me. I'm glad we get to do this again.
This is a Cavs team with, previously when we started doing these previews, there was just nothing happening with this team because we knew everyone's role. They were just rock solid. And then we went into a year last year with a lot of questions, and we're still back again here with more questions and more uncertainty with this squad. I'm going to start this show where I have been starting all of them by looking at injured players. And of course, the number one guy we have to look at here is the best player on this team, and that's Kevin Love, who barely played last season. We only got 22 games out of him and only 27 minutes a game there. I'm expecting those minutes to go back up a bit this season, but where are we at with his injury at the moment?
From all I understand, he's healthy. You know, I don't think there's any, I don't think there's anything out there that would suggest that Kevin isn't healthy, that would suggest that Kevin isn't going to be ready to go. I know he's not playing in FIBA, as are a number of other NBA stars, but I don't know if that's, I don't think that's a product of his injury health. I think it's just him perhaps wanting to make sure he's fresh going into what is going to be a very important season in his career. It's not the Olympics either, and I think a lot of guys kind of took that same calculus. I think he's a guy that should come in and be the focal point. I think he'll fit what Beeline does. I think there's a lot to like about where Kevin's at. I think if he's healthy, which, is a concern, I do think just even if he comes in healthy, like he's had this issue he had last year, he's had the back issues, some hand issues in the past, like, he's not a guy without a checkered injury history. So I do think that's always a concern with him. He's, about 30 now. That's a concern. A lot of minutes on him. But I think if he's healthy, he should be really, really good. I think he should be the focal point of the offense. As long as he's on the floor, there's no reason to think that wouldn't be the case. And I think if he's on the floor, it should be a very productive year for Kevin. I think, in a thinner Eastern Conference, I think this is an all-star caliber guy. Even if it's on a bad team, maybe he doesn't get rewarded for any, but I think the numbers should be there for Kevin.
Yeah, look, we can look at what he did and look at the 27 minutes per game, and that's annoying, but the final four starts that he had for the season, and he did come back and he played in late March, 33, 32, 29, and 35 minutes. And then he missed a few and then played a weird 13-minute game, the second last game of the season. But the fact that he came back at the end of March, he played these games, he had 22-8, 20-19, 10-11, and 18-8. And that's obviously really, really good numbers and really strong numbers. This is a guy that in the past has been a top 10 player. He's not going to get back to that level. But I agree with you. I think we're going to see the minutes push back up. I think we're going to see a 20-10, 20-11 type of season from Love. I think his assist will be strong because somebody on this team has to pass, because we know the guys in the backcourt probably aren't going to do that. The worries with efficiency and defensive numbers are always going to be there for Love, but I think that he won't be a 39% shooter that he was last season. The concern, of course, is the injuries. Now, his ADP on Fantrax is 70. That's ludicrous. I think he can be a top 25 guy this season on a per-game basis, but what sort of risk are you going to take in terms of how many games he plays? Is he going to play 50 games? Is he going to play 70 games? Because that could be the difference between you losing and winning a league. But if he slides to 50, it's an absolute no-brainer for me to pick Kevin Love there and take that risk, because the upside is a real league winner. The other injury one we have to talk about is Johnny Henson, who came across in that trade with the Bucks, and then we just never saw him. He should be ready to go with that thumb issue, but Chris, will he actually be in the rotation? Because I've got him as like the fourth string center at this point.
Hey, it's a really interesting question. Right now at Fear the Sword, we're doing, which is the site I run, for those who maybe don't know, we're doing these best case to worst case scenarios where it's myself and two other staff writers kind of offering the best case, worst case for each player. So we did John Henson on September 4th. And this is like what I put up for his best case, to just kind of read the three sentences I wrote. Henson's best case can play out in one of two ways. In one case, he's going to be traded for something of value before or at the deadline. And then the other best case for him is that he plays and he's just good enough to provide some defensive support, maybe some spacing, what is going to be a point behind what is going to be a point ceiling backcourt. This is the guy that, I was injured when he came over from Milwaukee. At that point, he was going to be playing for a coach in Larry Drew that he knew and seemed sort of interested in playing for. Now Larry Drew's gone. He was close-ish, to my understanding, if not all the way healthy, ready to go at the end of the year. They decided just not really worth playing him at this point. I don't know if he doesn't have the history at the team like a Tristan Thompson. I don't believe he's necessarily better than Tristan Thompson.
Oh, he's not.
I don't know what to do with him. I don't think if this was the league 5 years ago, you could probably find ways to play like him, Nance, Thompson, Love, whatever. But if you also want to throw Anthony Zizic into this, the Cavs have much more incentive, I think, to play everyone but him. So if you go down the list, Kevin Love is going to be the focal point of the team. Larry Nance Jr. is someone they really like, is signed to an extension, is part of the core, should doing some creation abilities too, based on what we saw last year from him. Tristan Thompson not only is an expiring contract that they might want to flip, but has been around, I think has earned kind of a place in that hierarchy, and also set screens, offensive rebounds better when he's healthy than Henson. And then Zizic, for as unsure as I am about him, he's younger, he's potentially going to be with the team longer. They have a rookie option on him for 2020-2021 that is under $4 million. They have no incentive not to figure out if Ante is worth kind of keeping around. With Henson, it's he's probably not on the team in 12 months anyway. It's what's the point of playing John Henson? I think you're kind of right. To me, he's of the guys that are on the main roster, not including Dean Wade on a two-way deal, who's a forward. He's the last guy that I think is that should be in the rotation as far as playing minutes at the four or the five spot.
Yeah, he's definitely not a four. He shouldn't be getting any minutes there. I just don't see.
Cavs just have such a weird roster that I just think you're going to see weird shit. Pardon my French, but you're going to see stuff that just makes no sense, and I think that's one of the things you could see.
There is weirdness on this roster. That is one way of putting it. Let's talk about a bit more weirdness. Actually, let's stick with the center position, because Larry Nance was, I thought, really good at times last season. In fact, for fantasy, he was fantastic. The 64th ranked player in only 27 minutes a night. But it was just a constant frustration with minutes being limited, him coming off the bench behind Tristan Thompson. Yeah, just, he'd go out, he'd play well, and then he'd get benched. And whatever Larry Drew was doing, it made no sense. Now John Beilein is here. I still don't know what to make of what Nance's role is going to be this season. We've seen he doesn't need 32 minutes to be a fantasy impact guy. If he gets it, great, because he's going to put up huge numbers. But He doesn't need that. Are we looking at Nance as the starting center? Are we going to have this, you know, nonsense of Tristan Thompson playing 30 minutes and Nance playing 18 minutes again? Like, what? Where? How are the Cavs viewing him? How's Beeline viewing him? Because they paid him like they want him to be a part of the future, but Drew refused to play him that way until Thompson got hurt.
You know, I think having a guy like John Beeline in should help Larry Nance. You know, he was around Vegas all summer, very publicly with John Beeline. I don't know what that means. And I think as we record this, we haven't had media day yet. Beeline's been pretty quiet since he gave his introductory press conference. And then they had the press conference for Darius Garland and Dylan Windler, two of their rookies. Like, I do not think that the Cavs are in a position to, like, really... I would say, like, we don't know in terms of evaluating the Cavs. Like, we do not know exactly what sort of these things are going to yield for guys like Nance. But I would say this. Like, I think if you want to look at him from last year, there's two areas of his game that I thought really, really stood out that I'm really closely watching to see if they hold up for him. You know, even if he comes off the bench and plays 27 minutes a game at night, which I don't think is unreasonable. Last year, he averaged a career-high assist. He went to 3.2 per game, and he made a career-high in threes at a half a three game, but he did take 1.5 a game, which is a big jump for him, up from 0.3 when he was with the Cavs in 2017-18. So, like, there's parts of his game that even though he's 26 and even though he's a little bit past, like, your typical age development curve that you would expect to see from players in the NBA, like, you don't typically see jumps in certain skill sets as guys get older. He's showing that stuff, and I think if that holds up this year, like, he becomes, I think, a good value on his contract. I think becomes a really interesting piece moving forward. I think one of the reasons I think he's going to have a big role this year is just when I think about how they're going to make lineups with Love that don't have Love on the floor work. I think a lot of it's going to come from Larry Nance Jr. If his passing and just his little bit of ability to keep the ball moving, to set screens, to kind of run some stuff where maybe he's handling the ball on a pick and roll as, like, a uber light version of, like, the Jokic Murray pick and roll. They did do a little bit of that even last year under Larry Drew. And then if he's hitting threes, like, his game and his kind of role on offense can grow and kind of provide a lesser version of sort of what we saw are going to see from Love. And I think that's going to support everybody. And I think he's, if those things hold true, and I don't know if there's a reason to think they won't, I think he could be in for a really, really interesting year in his, you know, his age 27 season.
And when you look at the assist number, it's a huge rise. He went from 2.1 per 36 to 4.3. And we're talking double the assist numbers last season. And my immediate thought is, okay, because Kevin Love wasn't there, so Nance was running a lot of that big man passing game that Love would have normally done. But then when Kevin Love came back, Nance was still putting up big assist numbers. He ended the season with these assist numbers, 5-1-6-7-4-2-4-3-3-5-6. Now, some of those games were with Kevin Love, some of those games were without Kevin Love, but it just shows that they both still can be there and he still can provide that value, and they utilized it so much more last season than what I don't think anybody could have anticipated that we would have got that from or that level from Larry Nance last season. But it is going to be interesting to see, again, if Kevin Love is healthy, but I have some confidence that he can still maintain those numbers, because he did maintain those numbers in that smallish sample size at the end of last season. Nance's ADP on Fantrax is 96. On ESPN, it's 107. I think he smashes those numbers. Yahoo is at about 70, which is about the right level. There is some risk there, but again, I'm projecting him to say 28 minutes a night, but if he plays 30 or 31, then he, you know, easily goes through that number. So I think I'm on almost the mid to low end of a minutes projection for Nance, because he did take some significant steps forward. I have also seen in a lot of mock drafts and people talking that people are really interested in grabbing Tristan Thompson late in drafts. I have exactly zero interest in Tristan Thompson for this season. He played a lot last season, but do you think that we're going to get that same weird Tristan Thompson renaissance that we got, especially at the beginning of last season? Or how is Beeline likely to handle it? Because you talk about Thompson being just this huge part of the Cavs and a staple that's been around for so long and a key part of the team. But those 28 minutes a night that he played, and it was much higher at the beginning of the season, I just don't see it from him again.
Just one quick thing on Nance, I think that's just worth noting. His usage rate was actually lower last year than it was his half a season with the Cavs in 2017-18, which is super weird. And his assist percentage went up from 7.6 in 2017-18 to 17.1 last year. Yeah. Like, that's like kind of crazy. But to talk about Tristan Thompson, I find him just fascinating because here's a guy that was the Iron Man of the Cavs for years. Like, if you go look at his game history, he plays, you know, he plays 60 games as a rookie, but then he rips off 82, 82, 82, 82 games played, plus, you know, two finals runs for 2 years in a row. Then he plays 78 games in 2016-17. Goes down to 53 in 2017-18, is basically like kind of written off by a lot of people, including myself, until he comes back after an injury break towards the end of the year and looks great towards the end of the regular season and into that last title run. Then I thought last year he was pretty good up until he kind of showed some injuries, but he also, you know, again, played into the finals that season before, I believe played for Canada last summer. He didn't go to the World Cup, I think, for Canada, even though, like, you know, he's kind of a leading figure in that team as well. But I kind of wonder if Tristan comes back this year and he, you know, if he starts, if his, maybe Nance gets more minutes and his minutes get dialed back a little bit from, like, 28 down to, like, 24. I think just him being a little less fatigued, a little more rested, I think there's reason to think he can have a good year. He's on the right side of 30 still. He's getting closer. He does have a ton of minutes and ton of games on his body already for a big. It could be a plateau. I don't think that's something we can distinctly write off. But I thought last year when he was healthy, he looked really good. He looked like kind of a prime Tristan Thompson to a large degree, and then kind of got slowed down a little bit. So if he can stay healthy, and maybe lower minutes will help him do that. And again, this lack of an active summer, I think he should be in good shape. And I also just think he's going to provide something that Beeline kind of likes out of his bigs. Guys that can set screens, guys that can roll, kind of can offensive rebound and do some of that work on the offensive end in a spaced out offense. Like, he can kind of play that kind of diver role, that kind of screener and kind of dirty work guy pretty well. So I would expect him to, as long as he's on the team, you know, doesn't get flipped to a contender or something. I think is, you know, depending on what his health is, I actually think Tristan should be pretty good this year. I thought he was just solid and pretty impressive, actually, you know, up until the point where some of the injuries kind of weighed down his season a bit.
Yeah, look, he definitely was much better last season than I could have anticipated. He also played, you know, 40 minutes a game some of the time here, 34 minutes, 33 minutes, another 35-minute game, 38-minute game, which really helped. But what he does really is grab rebounds. He can be efficient from the field. He's not a good shot blocker. So his overall fantasy upside is pretty limited. And I don't expect him to be playing that same load last season. Because the other thing that happened is that Nance was hurt at times. He played over Nance at times, but Love was injured. So they played Nance and Thompson front courts. And again, if we're assuming that Love is going to play more games than the 20-odd he played last season, then that opportunity for Nance and Thompson to share that front court is probably going to be lower this season than what it was last year. So I think I just don't see him as an upside guy. ESPN's got him ranked at 97. There is no need for that at all. He doesn't need to be picked anywhere near that. Last season, in 28 minutes, he was 152nd. So again, you're not expecting him to be picked at number 97. Well, you shouldn't be considering picking him there. Let's talk about the rookie from last year, Colin Sexton, who was bad for a lot of the season, but then became good for the end of the season. Now, he still has some significant issues. He doesn't rebound. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't pass. He doesn't block shots, but he shot so well from three. I was surprised. 40% from three last season, and he had that run at the end of the year of about 12 consecutive 20-point games. He averaged over 20 points a game over the final 25 games of the season. Again, it didn't come with any other stats, and he couldn't even crack the top 100 there in fantasy. But I guess the question for you, Chris, is that Sexton did all that, again, with Kevin Love sort of not there for a lot of that time, but now he has to, you know, coexist with Darius Garland. Are we going to ever see Sexton develop an ability to pass or run an offense or set up his teammates or provide defensive numbers? Like, what are we looking at? Is that run at the end of last season peak Colin Sexton? Because he was playing a lot of minutes, he was doing a lot on his own, and I don't see that being able to sustain for a whole season this year.
Here's what I would say. I think Colin Sexton's future in the NBA is based on his rookie year, and I think even if he's in a better system, I think he actually does project to be like at least like a good scorer. And I don't know if that means he's like a Jordan Clarkson type or like a better version of that. But I think it's notable that this is a guy that went from not being able to really shoot threes or really wanting to shoot threes to, for the year, shooting 40% from three.
And on big volume too.
That's kind of impressive. Yeah, that's really impressive. And if you just look at his catch and shoot numbers, basically half of his threes were catch and shoot. He shot 45%, just under 45% on those. You know, I think I have legitimate concerns about his vision. I don't think the Cavs' scheme last year or kind of lack of, I think, one really helped him. I don't think, you know, that him playing a bunch with Jordan Clarkson, which was like his third most common, you know, teammate pairing, according to the two-man lineup data, you know, really helped him. I think Kevin Love being out for so much of the year definitely was a negative impact on his rookie year. You know, I think he's actually should be do pretty well in Beilein's offense. I do think that offensive skill is very real. I do think, you know, a summer where he can, you know, add some size to his body and maybe get a little better at finishing at the rim, I think will really help him. But I think the three-point shot is real. And I think once that happened, when he already has good speed, he's got some good twitchy movement, dribble, and driving. I think at the very least, you know, I have, again, concerns about him as a passer, as an offensive leader, as someone who can who just doesn't really know what to do on the defensive end right now. I think at least the scoring and him being able to put up, like, decent scoring numbers and probably maybe improving on his shot selection a little bit, improving on, you know, his overall field goal percentage from last year, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing for him in year two. I think he really made a pretty important leap. And I think knowing his personality, knowing how much that guy works, knowing how competitive he is, I don't really doubt that wasn't real, because I just sort of know like the stuff that doesn't show up in the numbers is like that guy like loves basketball. He spent a lot of time working on that shot. And like, it's so notable to me that I can distinctly remember being at a game and watching him dribble in from a wide open corner three to take a mid-range shot to at the end of the year taking like shots from a couple feet behind the three-point arc. Like, that dude really did improve, and I think it's definitely real.
I agree. Look, he was impressive in that run at the end of the season. The worries I have is, and you mentioned Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson's last 2 months of his rookie season, he was unbelievable because he was playing on a Lakers team that had no one. He was running the show. And that seemed to be a lot of the case here for Sexton, but I do believe that he can still be an efficient scorer. But the problem is the rebounds and threes rebounds and assists and steals and blocks. Yeah, will he actually be able to do anything in those areas to make him anything more than a late round pick? That's where I have the concerns. I fully believe that he will be able to score and do it decently efficiently. I think we'll see maybe a bit of a dip in usage, especially from that March-April portion of the season because of the other players coming in and a larger load for Love and Darius Garland coming in. And as we move forward, as more talented players come onto this Cavs team, I don't think he'll be required to do as much as he did at the end of that season. But he's worth looking at with a late-round pick, 11th round, 10th round, 12th round, that sort of a zone. For him to be better than that, he needs to either become a 25, 26 point per game guy, which I don't think he's going to do, or start contributing in those other categories, which is where I have my concerns with Sexton. But he is really still going to be a strong point scorer, and getting points late in a draft is really tough. So that probably boosts his value a little bit higher than what the overall rank might suggest. His backcourt partner of the future, maybe of the start of the season, we don't know at this point. Darius Garland, the Cavs made that selection. We didn't really see anything of Garland in college. He didn't play in summer league. I stood next to him at summer league. He is small. He is very, very thin. Like I could have easily pushed him over, but I didn't because I value my
shots fired by Josh Lloyd calling him Darius Garland small. Shots fired.
He was he stood next to me, right? And so I sort of glanced across and I just said, oh, who's this kid? He wasn't playing, obviously, so he wasn't wearing his uniform or anything like that. I just thought it was one of the ball boys helping out. I thought it was, I didn't know who it was. And I looked up and I go, this is Darius Garland, isn't it? And I saw him, but he was frail. Like, not frail as in like he's going to break his hip, but he was small, and I worry how that size is going to impact him. He's not short. He's about my height. He's about 6'3", I believe. But very, very, I probably had 40 pounds on him. He's very, very thin, and that's going to have a defensive issue. Now, last season, to say all this, last season the Cavs started Colin Sexton on the bench, and he came into that starting lineup, relatively early on. What do we look at here for Garland? How is a Sexland backcourt going to work? How is he going to start over Brandon Knight? How long until they bring him in? Like, how are these two, who have definite concerns, Sexton and Garland, in terms of running an offense, vision, passing, defense, like, how is this going to work? It could be fun, but disastrous fun as well.
Right now, I think we have no idea. I think we have no idea on how it's going to work, because we just don't really know what Beilein's kind of thinking in that regard. We don't really know what his sort of plan is right now. It's just been kind of so long since we've kind of heard from him. We don't know what they've seen internally from Sexton and or seen internally from Garland. And like, Sexton was around in summer league, and even though I think they did get a chance to kind of speak to one another, and they both kind of went out of their way to, at least Sexton did, to my knowledge, say like, hey, I was studying McCollum and Lillard. So I think that's like the template there, which is a high template, a tough template to follow, but I think that is the template they want to follow. You know, I think Brandon Knight, to kind of talk about him in the context of this, I think one, like, I think if you're looking at the kind of like the front court, the Cavs have a lot of bodies for those one and kind of two spots between, you know, Garland, Sexton, Clarkson, Delly, and Brandon Knight. If I was the Cavs, what I would do is, I think Clarkson right now is probably just in a vacuum the best guy. So I think you just kind of play him. He's probably the guy you're hoping you can flip at some point to a team that gets a little desperate for scoring. I think Delly probably should play just because, you know, he's going to move the ball. You know, he's going to be kind of shoot threes, play a little better defense. I think Knight's kind of in that, should be in that Johnson Henson territory, just because I don't quite know what the purpose of really playing him would be. With Garland, I don't know if he's going to start. I think this is just something at media day. We're going to really need to see what, you know, John Bielan has to say about that. But I think when he does play, the things we're going to see from him are that he's a little different than Sexton, that he's going to come in being willing to take, you know, threes from 30 feet and being very aggressive in that regard. And I'm curious to see how that plays out. And I'm curious to see kind of what Bielan's offense, which is so predicated on flow and movement and spacing and kind of a structure. I'm curious to see how that allows those guys to coexist. Cause I think if there is a coach that is going to figure it out, Bielan's track record as an offensive innovator kind of indicates to me that he definitely can be that guy.
Yeah. I think Garland is worth looking at with a late pick. I think that he's probably got a little bit more upside than Sexton in terms of his overall ability to contribute in other categories. He had a decent assist and steal rate in his AAU days, better than what we saw in college. But again, it was a 5-game sample size, not the greatest free throw shooter, but not horrible in that area. So I think he's worth taking a look at there. But again, like most rookie guards, especially, the going might be a little bit slow early on. Brandon Knight, even if he does start the season as a starter, he's not going to have any real value in fantasy leagues. Let's talk about the other starter on this team who we're fairly confident is going to start. That's Chetty Osman over at small forward. Osman had some moments last season. He had some struggles to begin the year. Shots just wouldn't go in. Really, really seemed not out of place, but like the increased role was getting to him. But I thought he played pretty well, especially as the season went on. He ended the year as the 164th ranked fantasy player, but inside the top 120 over the final 35 games. I think his minutes, his role, it's all fairly secure. And we just have to hope that that shooting sticks at where it was at the end of last season versus where it was at the beginning of the season. Chris, you there?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, yep, you're back. Chetty Osman.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay.
Yep. Chetty Osman, his role for this season.
I think Chetty, this is a make or break year for Chetty. I'm very high on him. I think, you know, anyone that's seen him play in the FIBA World Cup knows that there's something there. I don't think we've seen the kind of the version of him that is going to really bring the best out of him in these next couple of years. I think Jetty's a guy that has a lot of potential to be an interesting secondary creator, be a decent shooter, be just kind of a solid overall player. I don't think he's a star or an all-star or anything like that, but I think he could be a really solid, dependable rotation player on a team. And I think he fits what Bielan does. I think, you know, he's going to be for the first time in a system that should allow him to be creative, to pass. That's kind of the thing I think that is his potential best skill. I think it's, you know, I think defensively, if he can take on a little bit of a lesser burden than he had to do last year in defending, you know, guys like Lauri Markkanen and stuff like that. Like, I think if he doesn't have to defend fours all the time, that should help him on the other end. But this is year three for him, I think. And this is he's coming in, even if the roster itself isn't great, even if there's going to be this team, I don't think it's going to be very good. This is the best situation he's had for what he's going to do. I think, again, he fits Bielan. I think, you know, his passing, I think his shooting should all kind of hold up. And I think in a better structure, in kind of being pushed to sort of be the best version of himself, I think that this is the year where I think this could click for Chetty. But if it's going to happen, I think it's this year. I think there's definitely, again, something to be had there. But I think we really got to kind of see it consistently this year. And again, this is year three. He's going into the last year of his contract. It's an important year for him.
I think that he's solid as a starter. I think he's solid in terms of fantasy production. Upside as a low usage wing with other players coming in, hopefully full season of Kevin Love, the addition of Garland. I think it's just going to make it hard to see him as much of an upside guy, but I do think that he can be an important rotation player, an important starter on a team like the Cavs, but the fantasy value is pretty limited.
I will, I will, I will say this about him. If he hits, like if I do think there is maybe a little more upside to him than you're saying, just because the Cavs are very thin on the wing.
Yeah.
He's going to play a bunch of minutes. I think, you know, again, I think if you look at what he does well as a passer and being creative and moving the ball, that's what Beilein likes to do. I think he's going to be a Beilein favorite. And I think there's a chance, and I don't know what kind of odds I would place on it. I certainly in a fantasy perspective, or if I was like kind of building, you know, a team, I wouldn't say he's worth like a high pick in any regard, but I do think there's something there where like, if you just need to take a roll of dice on the wing, like I would rather have him in that kind of situation than like a Stanley Johnson type. That's like sure. You know, kind of younger flawed wing. But I think Jetty, just because of his offensive potential in Beilein's system, I think is just, he's a top three most interesting player on this Cavs team to me. And that's sort of kind of my personal biases with him, but I think he's really interesting. And I think this is just a really optimal setup for him to do something if it's going to happen for him.
Do you think that the Cavs had 3 first-round picks this season? Do you think that Dylan Windler, one of those first-round picks, has a chance? You talk about the lack of depth at, say, small forward and at power forward. Could Windler be in the rotation immediately?
I think it would be surprising if Windler and Porter Jr. both weren't in the rotation at some point. No, maybe I think Windler probably has the lead kind of going into camp just because he's a little older, a little less raw, has a more defined skill set as a shooter. But I think there's no reason. I don't think the Cavs have any incentive not to play both of them this year.
Agree.
You know, how they play is obviously a very important question and an answerable question right now. We need to see it. But I think both of them, I don't know. It'll be curious to see how many minutes they both get and sort of when they get introduced. But I think both Dylan Windler and I think Kevin Porter Jr. both should get play this year. There's not really a reason not for the Cavs not to go down that road.
Jordan Clarkson, you mentioned him already. I think that we'll see a little bit of a smaller role for Clarkson this season. Again, as we've got lottery top 10 picks as guards over the last 2 years. He played 27 minutes a night last year, 29 minutes a game over the final 26 games of the season. I do think that's going to drop off for Clarkson this season just to fit these minutes in for someone like Garland. You're still going to have your sixth man role, but probably won't have to rely upon him. You're quite to the same level as last season.
I think the thing with Clarkson is you're trying to walk two very distinct paths. I think you don't want him to muck up things for your rookies who are the future of your franchise, but you also want to have him play well enough and be interesting enough and attractive to other teams enough where he's like shooting well and maybe defending a tad bit better or at least more engaged, where like another team comes calling and like you can get something of value for him. Now, I don't think that's like a first round pick, but if you could get 2 seconds or like, take on like a guy that's maybe like got a little bad money, but is like still useful to the Cavs in particular, and a second round pick. Like, I think that's kind of what you're hoping for. But the question is, you know, how do the Cavs manage like him playing with these young guys? It's unavoidable that he's going to, but if you also just look at the data from Sexton and Clarkson, there's very little to like about the duo over the course of a full season. Now, I can look at games and point out, I could go back through my notes and tell you specific ones that did work and moments and things that kind of did work as the season went on. But overall, the data is just so bad that we'd almost need like another full season of the opposite for me to believe that those things aren't harmful for the team and for those guys. And how Beilein kind of manages playing him with those two guys and which of those young guys he maybe shares the backcourt with more often than not is going to be really interesting.
I don't see Clarkson as being much of a fantasy asset this season, maybe for 16 team leagues. Again, last season he did play 27 minutes a night and didn't crack the top 140. And again, I don't imagine him being at that same level for this coming season. I reckon that'll wrap us up here for talking about this Cavs team. Chris, just quickly before I go, The value pick, I think, is Kevin Love on Fantrax at 73. There's tremendous value there. I also think Tristan Thompson at 97 is a bit of a bust value there. Well, not value. He's a bust at that spot. You don't want to draft him at that position. Chris, let everybody know, A, where they can find your work and find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter and all social media platforms at CWMWrites. You can read my writing at Fear the Sword, SB Nation's Cavs site, and places like The Step Back and over at Forbes.
So go and check out Chris on Twitter and his writing. Chris, thanks for jumping on Locked On Fantasy Basketball with me.
As always, thanks for having me.
And that'll do it for this Cleveland Cavaliers preview. Make sure you are subscribed to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button, hit the bell, notifications, leave a comment, give a thumbs up, all of that great stuff. Check out my new Patreon tier, patreon.com/redrock_beeble, the good bloke tier, where we're going to have subscriber only mailbags or Patreon only mailbags, pre-tip, pre-game shows, 2 days a week through the regular season, DFS advice, lineup, streaming info as well on that show, just for those good blokes over on Patreon. Follow me on Twitter @redrock_beeble. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone.